Everybody, our guest today is Aaron Zellman. He's the director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. You can look them up at jpfo.org. He is the author of a book called Hope and the co-author of a book called The State Versus the People, The Rise of the American Police State, and another co-authored credential, Death by Gun Control, The Human Cost of Victim Disarmament. Mr. Zellman, let me ask you, why such zealous advocacy of gun rights? You guys make the National Rifle Association look like Handgun Control Incorporated, for crying out loud.
Well, from our perspective, gun control is evil. Gun control will get you killed. It's not just a matter of some inconvenience to us. I mean, to us, it is a deadly concept. And more people have died from gun control schemes in the last 100 years than the lives that might have been saved by some gun control law. And so we've always just taken the position that there is a zero tolerance for gun control. Because if you allow the government to have monopoly on arms, which is where gun control usually leads, then you have a police state.
And so you're taking that lesson then from World War II, I guess.
Well, it's not just World War II. You know, if you go back and you look at the history of a government having monopoly on arms, you can go back to the time of the Romans or the kings of England. You know, the peasants couldn't have crossbows. Certain people couldn't have a knife beyond a certain blade length. During the Reconstructionist period, the Jim Crow laws, black people weren't allowed to buy an expensive handgun. They had to only buy cheap handguns. It's when they could even get them. So it isn't just World War II. In fact, in 1928 in Germany, the Weimar Republic, when they instituted their gun registration scheme, they made it very clear that Romanis, which are often called gypsies, cannot own a handgun. That was 1928. World War II was in the 40s. So we have a long history in this world of arms control that negatively impacts the average human being.
So you mean to say then that when the state disarms people, that usually they're planning on making a victim out of them? Or maybe they just end up doing it anyway, whether they're playing
Well, ask yourself a question. Why would the state want people disarmed if it trusted the people? Why would the state want people disarmed if it wasn't going to do anything? It would make the people angry.
Well, I think their argument would be to protect life because there's so many murders by guns
Okay. Well, you know, but that the argument doesn't work, does it? Because you can pass all the laws you want, but the murderers, the criminals, keep getting the guns. So who have they protected? They've protected the criminals from the law-abiding who are foolish enough to abide by gun control laws. You know, there's all kinds of criminals in the world. There's street criminals and there's professional criminals. I'll let you decide which one the government is.
Well, they're definitely professionals. There's no doubt about that. I have a quote here from Adolf Hitler from 1935. He said, "This year will go down in history. For the first time, a civilized nation has complete gun registration. Our streets will be safer, our police more efficient, and the world will follow our lead into the future."
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but I think that quote is a fraud.
Oh, really?
It's Adolf Hitler did mention in a book called Adolf Hitler's Table Talk. He talked about how it would be a folly for a conquering government to allow the subjected races to own firearms. And you can credit him with that type of thinking, but that particular statement, we've spent years trying to trying to prove that it is true, that it is credible, and we've not been able to do that.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll be more careful about that one in the future then. Is it
true?
I mean,
you know, to some degree it parallels his thinking, I'm sure, but we've never been able to prove that he actually said it.
Well, and the Nazis did pass massive gun control laws during their
rise to power. Well, I'll tell you what they did is when the Nazis came to power in 1933, they took the existing gun control laws from the Weimar Republic that we previously mentioned that had gun owners' names and addresses and the gun they own, that type of information, all of the typical registration scheme. And they took advantage of that, and they just went about collecting guns from people that they didn't think were loyal members of the party. So they really didn't have to pass any laws at all. They just took them over. Now, that's one of the dangers of the do-good, feel-good crowd of trying to tell us that, well, you know, what's wrong with registering a gun? You register your car. The Nazis didn't go around confiscating cars.
Is it true that there are parallels between the United States Gun Control Act of 1968 being copied from the Nazi law?
Well, there are a lot of parallels. You know, I think people need to understand the history here. The author of the 68 Gun Control Act was a late Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut. And he had copies of the German gun control laws. He gave them to the Law Library of Congress to translate for him. And, in fact, I think the letter is on our website. The letter back from the Law Library and at the Library of Congress telling Congressman Dodd that they did indeed have completed the translation he requested. They named the name of the translator. And so there's no doubt that he used that as a basis to create the 68 Gun Control Act. And there's some parallels. You know, the whole idea of buying a firearm became more of a privilege than a right under the 68 Gun Control Act. A lot of information had to be required from you when you obtained a firearm. You had to fill out federal firearms forms. The sale of firearms through the mail was banned. And so the restrictions on gun ownership started in earnest. Not just the 68 Gun Control Act, but of course also in the 30s. But there was a further push in the 68 Gun Control Act to make sure that certain types of people didn't have firearms. The whole concept on the 68 Gun Control Act, by the way, was it came about after the riots in 1968, where Congress wanted to know if black people were buying firearms. To this day, if you look at a federal firearms form, 4473, one of the boxes you have to check is your race. The government, even with knowing what your social security number is, what your serial number is, where you live, where you work, still wants to know what race you are.
That's interesting. They're keeping statistics on that.
And nowadays the government, if you want to buy a gun, you have to go through the FBI check. And they determine if you're a felon or not based on your previous record. But in the meantime, they've got your name and your address and your birth date, and they know you're a gun owner.
Wasn't there a law that said that they had to destroy all the records from the Brady Bill checks?
Well, you can pass all the laws you want. These people don't care what the law says. There's a law saying the Bureau of Alcohol Tobacco and Firearms can't go into gun stores and photocopy these records and then computerize them. But they do it. They've been doing it for decades.
We've seen in the news recently the Bush administration proposing the renewal of the assault weapons ban that's up for sunset.
As I understand it, what they're saying is that they really don't want to deal with it. Now, if it sunsets, fine. If it doesn't, they really don't care. And I think that people need to understand that the ban in question, makes it difficult for certain types of firearms to be brought into America that look like military guns, but are not.
I was going to ask you, what exactly is the definition of an assault weapon?
Well, that's an English translation. First of all, the term Sturmgewehr, which is German, means assault rifle. And assault weapon it comes from the same German slang, Nazi slang, Sturmgewehr. So people keep talking about assault rifles or simply using the translation of a Nazi slang term.
So it ends up kind of being able to mean sort of any scary-looking gun that they want to call an assault weapon is an assault weapon, right?
Well, whatever they decide, correct.
So it doesn't just mean fully automatic rifles or something.
Precisely.
Are there any other new gun laws on the federal level that people ought to keep their eye on, or new laws proposed?
None that I'm aware of, but I must confess I don't spend a lot of time following the laws. Because our focus at JPFO is trying to destroy gun control, not trying to compromise with it, or trying to figure out how to work around it.
Which I guess that's what really makes y'all different from the NRA, correct? I mean, they tend to say, okay, well, this law's good, just enforce this one and don't pass any new ones.
Yeah, well, that would not come from JPFO. You know, I mean, to us, there is no such thing as a good gun control law. And so we're not interested in pursuing gun control law.
Well, what do you say to...
Or compromising on the issue.
What do you say to a Democrat who says, but there are thousands of murders by guns in the United States every year?
Yeah, and most of them are done by criminals to other criminals. The laws prove year in, year out that if someone wants to get a firearm to commit a crime, it's no problem to do it.
Do we have any statistics on how many legitimate uses of firearms in self-defense against criminals go down on average per year?
Not that I'm aware of.
That would be something.
I'm sure they're out there, but at the moment I don't have that at my fingertips.
I one time pointed out to someone, I think I probably learned this rhetoric from you guys in the first place, but I pointed out to someone that when you see the pictures of the Jews being crammed in the cattle cars on their way off to the concentration camps, I pointed out that, wow, none of them are holding rifles, and that maybe if they had rifles, they wouldn't have been in that cattle car on the way to their death. And I've gotten some very acid reactions from a statement like that.
Well, what kind of reactions have you received when you say acid reactions?
Oh, just how that's such a terrible and cold thing to say and a ridiculous thing to say, and that they lived in a total tyranny, and if they had a rifle, they'd have been just as dead or worse. And
well, how much worse can you get than being dead? I've heard those kind of comments from people. And if you look at the Warsaw Ghetto Battle, the uprising as it's called, a few hundred people had some guns, and they held a German division off there, or whatever it was called, a battalion, for almost a month. So, you know, had more people joined in the fight, and there had been more guns available, had more people been willing to defend their lives and stay alive. And then that's what I think that is wrong with some of the people today who want to promote gun control schemes and who poo-poo the idea of gun ownership, is they personally don't put a high value on life, their life or your life. So they don't really care if you become a victim. I think we have to realize there's a lot of people in the world who don't care about life, who don't care about staying alive. They may say they do on the surface, but in reality they don't do anything to keep themselves alive. And I think you're going to run into these people, and it's best that you not even waste your time trying to talk to them, frankly, because they don't want to learn. They don't want to do what's right. They don't want to take the action to stay alive. They want to call 911 and hope that somebody shows up. So just be prepared for those people.
I noticed you guys had an advertisement on your website for a book called Dial 911 and Die.
Correct. That's written by Richard Stevens. He's an attorney. And he did the research for all 50 states. And there's a chapter for each state in America. And it deals with the 911 system and the courts also. And lo and behold, you know, you're on your own. You are your own first line of self-defense. The police don't have to respond to those calls.
There was just a commercial I saw on TV not too long ago where the wife or the mother and her two kids are sitting down to watch a video, and the violent criminal comes breaking in the window, and they run upstairs, and the phone rings, and it's the security guard company says, "Is everything okay?" And she says, "No, some criminal is breaking in the window." And he says, "Don't worry, ma'am, we're calling 911 for you right now." And I thought, well, as long as they're upstairs, they'll be safe until the cops get there, right? Those stairs are going to protect
them. Amazing. Amazing. You notice the security people weren't going to endanger themselves, which I think is curious. And the police will get there when they can, if they can, depending upon what their workload is. And there are a lot of police officers who try very hard to help and serve people, but I think by and large the majority, it's a smaller amount of people in the police department who really are not that enthusiastic about putting their life in danger. To them, their most important job is to get home that evening. And you can't blame them, but I think people have to realize, as we pointed out in the book, that you don't have a right to police protection. You can, even if they don't show up and say, and you have a death in your family because some criminal killed somebody, you can sue, but you won't win. Your case will be thrown out of court. Because of sovereign immunity.
They'll say they did everything they could. Sorry it wasn't enough.
Yep. So again, you're on your own. Which is another reason for people to be able to defend their lives. Assuming they want to stay alive. Again, there are people out there that really don't put a high value on life.
Well, what about, let's try to be fair to the average gun control proponent out there. Wouldn't they argue that they care about life so very much that they think nobody should have guns so that people will stop killing each other all the time?
Well, with that kind of a position, you realize, maybe they don't realize, but everyone else should understand what kind of nonsense they're spouting. There's not a single gun control law in the history of the world that hasn't stopped criminals from getting guns to go kill other people. There hasn't been a single knife control law where it would stop a criminal from, you know, fashioning a knife. So when people make those kind of statements, they're really engaged in what I call a fantasy.
There's a very important book of the last century called Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley. It's very important for a number of reasons, which I won't necessarily get into here, but there's a thing in the beginning where he talks about when saddles were invented in Europe and how they had gone from these massive armies of men on foot with swords and how all of a sudden you had these guys who were specifically trained in this specialized horseback warfare and how they had such an advantage over the average soldier on foot that they ended up becoming the knights and the tyrants, and it wasn't until firearms were invented that then that kind of evened things out and created a situation, in fact, in this country where we had a revolution and a constitutional republic, because basically the government couldn't take the people of America's rights away because they were all armed. And then his point really, I think, is about how specialized weapons create tyranny, and then generalized weapons create freedom. And I wonder, though, here we live in an era of no one could argue specialized weapons, and we have hydrogen bombs, and we have Apache helicopters, and we have all these specialized weapons that the populace couldn't possibly have. So I wonder if you really believe that the average American having a quality rifle is really going to protect him from a total police state when our government is armed to the teeth.
Well, it's true. The government is very well armed with the latest technology. Two things you have to keep in mind. If you watched what was going on in Iraq, even with all of our technology, the possibility of guerrilla warfare was a grave concern to the U.S. military. Two, the people are driving that tank. Sooner or later, they have to get out of that tank and go to the bathroom and go get some food. It's open season on them at that point. But three, to avoid all of this violence, we need to have a Bill of Rights culture in America. And if we have a Bill of Rights culture where the people control the government, not the government controlling the people, then whatever technology is readily available will also be possessed by the people. So the way to resolve the problem that you're talking about, and it's a serious problem, because it does exist at this very second, it does exist, is to bring about a Bill of Rights culture. And that is, you know, you find people who believe in all the Bill of Rights for all citizens. You support those people. They in turn demand that any government bureaucracy that performs a function that violates the Bill of Rights, that government bureaucracy must be shut down. You implement the Bill of Rights culture, you, you bring about the Bill of Rights culture if you really want to have freedom and never fear government. That's the solution to the problem. And it's not that difficult from my perspective if you get enough people who decide they want to be free. They want to live free. People who don't want to live free, people who don't put a high value on life, you can expect them not to care and not to join in the fight.
Have you had a problem with big parts of the population being kind of content with George Bush being the president now, and maybe a lot of the pro-gun movement has sort of comfortably sat back as opposed to all the energy that was surrounding your movement back in the 90s?
That's sort of a political question. I'm going to sidestep it because we're not supposed to, as a tax-exempt organization, we're not supposed to get involved in politics. I will tell you this much. There is a malaise in America, or an apathy. People are having trouble accepting what's going on in this country, the economic problems, the terrorist problems, the push by the government to restrict freedoms. And so there are people who are trying to just bury their head in the sand. A lot of that's going on. I can't comment on whether it's related directly to a specific politician or not. But I have no problem telling you that the American people are snoozing, and I suspect something will happen at some point, somewhere, that's going to wake a lot of people up. I don't know what it's going to be, but I suspect something will happen. You know, Pearl Harbor was one of those examples. Something happened, got everyone's attention, whether it was planned, whether it was purely accidental, whether it was an act of war or aggression or whatever you want to call it. Something like that will get people's attention. I suspect that will happen in America one of these days.
Well, it seemed like it happened on September 11th. I mean, the federal government was absolutely impotent to protect anyone that day. The only people who did anything were the civilians on the plane that rushed the terrorist and crashed it into the field.
You would think September 11th would have gotten some people's attention, but every effort's been made to smooth it over. And the punch that it could have delivered has been sort of pulled, if I can put it that way. And the American people, for the most part, go about their lives and their jobs, and they don't really think about much else. You know, the American people have what we call a short attention span. They don't pay attention to what they should be paying attention to. Most of them have what we call national amnesia, where they don't understand the history of the country. They don't understand why, you know, what really brings about justice for all. They don't understand the history of the Bill of Rights. And when you tell most people about the Bill of Rights as an example, it being a list of declaratory clauses telling the government what it cannot do, some people are astounded. They've never thought of it that way. They've never heard it expressed that way.
They've never read the preamble to the Bill.
That's right. That's right. They've never read the preamble about these are declaratory clauses on the newly formed government, the limitations of its power. And so, you know, this is a long question, this is a long answer to a short question, but the American people really need to be awakened. And I'm not sure what it's going to take to do that, but I suspect it will be something evil instead of something good.
On your website, jpfo.org, we have an open letter to George Bush. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
That was a letter we did quite some time ago, dealing with the Homeland Security issue and suggesting to President Bush that he realize that the military, the National Guard, the FBI and all the other folks in the government really cannot be all places at all times. And just like when you dial 911, you know, the fire department, they'll get there as soon as they can, but they can't be there 2 seconds after you dial. And so the same thing holds true here with the Homeland Security, which is somewhat specious, but that's another story. Anyway, you know, there are people who live in rural areas who know that area better than anybody you're going to bring in from some other city to protect them. And there should be a push by the federal government, as there was during World War II, Even FDR, who was a promoter of gun control schemes at the same time, had civilians walking around with Tommy guns in some of the seaport areas, helping be an auxiliary to patrol the area, keep their eyes open, and look for the enemy. And I think we should be doing that again in America. So people can read the letter there to President Bush, and it's just simply a letter encouraging him to give a serious thought and consideration of doing this. So we encourage people to also read the letter. We've never gotten an answer, by the way. But I would encourage people to go to the website, jpfo.org, and read the letter, the open letter to George Bush.
Can you tell me anything about Project Exile? I've heard a little bit about this, and I really don't even know exactly what it is. I was wondering if you could explain to me what that is.
Well, as I understand Project Exile, they're trying to clamp down on what they call the illegal use of firearms. And I don't know how successful they've been, because I don't hear very much about it lately. But it's another government job to make it look like that's jobs for the boys kind of thing, and make it look like they're doing something. And that's what a lot of government does, by the way. They just do things and make it look like they're doing something. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, and I know you got to go. We're already over time. But I just want to ask you one more quick question.
Sure.
About that gold gun on your website with the Bill of Rights and James Madison quotes all over it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's a Bill of Rights pistol. And I think it's the first one that's ever been created. And it's a limited edition pistol, and it's available not from us, but from the folks who make them. And all the information is on our website for anybody who would like to pursue that.
And my friend,
I think on our website, though, if someone wants to do something useful with their time, is take a look at the documentary that we're producing called Innocence Betrayed. And this is a documentary showing the history of how a government that has a monopoly on arms is able to target people, demonize them, and then exterminate them. I think people, there's a clip of a movie that we're making, a one-minute clip, and they'll give them a sense of what we're doing. I think people might find that fascinating.
Is there a total for the number of people killed by their own governments after gun control laws were passed in the last century?
The numbers vary. We use the number 170 million. There are people who use a number as high as 5 million. I mean, 500 million or 700 million. I just don't know. But we're conservative on the numbers that we do use. But it's been more people have been killed by their own governments than any form of or any other possible way of killing people. People think the Ku Klux Klan is a dangerous society, or street gangs are a dangerous society. But they're pikers. They haven't even begun compared to the number of people murdered by their own governments. People have had faith in a government that turns on them and murders them.
Wow. Aaron Zellman, Director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. It can be looked up at jpfo.org. You have any closing comments?
I would encourage people to think seriously about bringing about a Bill of Rights culture, all the Bill of Rights for all citizens. That's the only way we're really going to have a situation where no one anymore, or no one would fear government. And if you want to be freedom, if you want to have freedom from fear of government, then focus on bringing about a Bill of Rights culture. We have lots of information on our website about Bill of Rights Day, which is December 15th. And there's a lot of ways that people can download information. It's free to help start talking up the Bill of Rights. That's what I encourage people to do.
Great. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.